Hello and welcome to International Media with me, Amanda Morrow. This week's show looks at the anniversary edition of the French satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo, 1 year after its Paris office was attacked, plus the death of the first female journalist in Syria at the hands of the Islamic State. And we speak to the European Broadcasting Union over Poland's controversial new media law, which critics say compromises the editorial independence of the state broadcaster. 1 year after Charlie Hebdo lost 8 of its editorial staff in an assault by Islamist gunmen, the weekly magazine remains deliberately provocative. Refusing self-censorship, its staff work from security-fortified offices, and the publication is printed at a top-secret location. The front page commemorating the attacks depicts an angry, bearded, god-like figure as a terrorist. He has blood on his hands and a Kalashnikov slung over his shoulder. The headline reads, 1 year on, the murderer is still on the run. Charlie Hebdo editor Rhys said that his team wanted to mark the anniversary with a deliberate attack on religion in general.
For me, the problem is the belief in a divine entity who looks down on us from above and who's at the origin of everything. It's more of a philosophical problem than a problem of terrorism. That's what I wanted this special issue to address. We're in the country of Voltaire, where we have the right to live without God, and I want to live without God.
On a le droit de vivre sans Dieu, et moi je veux vivre sans Dieu, voilà.
The anniversary edition includes contributions from journalists and public officials, including the French culture minister. Northern Irish novelist Robert McLeam Wilson is one contributor, having joined Charlie Hebdo after the attack. He told RFI that humour and humiliation can be an effective response to violence.
The more you're kind of pompous and sure of yourself and convinced of your rectitude, the less you like being mocked. It's certainly what I've always found even in Northern Ireland. Sinn Féin or the IRA didn't mind me saying anything about them, but telling a really good joke about them was the end of the world, you know? I think Charlie represents a thing in French culture which it would be disappointing to lose.
The message conveyed on Charlie Hebdo's cover is part of a wider debate on the place of religion in a secular country that's struggling with homegrown jihadism. The massacre of 8 cartoonists and journalists puts France near the top of the Committee to Protect Journalists list of most deadly countries for the press in 2015, second only behind Syria. Well, on the ground in Syria, activists have confirmed the murder of the first female journalist at the hands of the Islamic State. 30-year-old Rukia Hassan, accused of being a spy for the Free Syrian Army, was detained by the militants last August. She was reportedly executed in September in her home city of Raqqa, with news of her death breaking only recently. Rukia has been described as a spirited activist and citizen journalist with a dry sense of humour, mocking an Islamic State ruling to ban Wi-Fi hotspots in the city. She posted, "Go ahead and cut off the internet. Our messenger pigeons won't complain." Kristen Vanilio is the editor-in-chief of Syria Direct, a non-profit journalism organisation based in Amman, Jordan. She says there's been no information as to exactly where or how Rukia was executed.
What we know for sure is that her family was informed of her death earlier this week. It's not surprising that she disappeared. She had been reporting on her personal Facebook page for a while, but her last posts were increasingly dangerous in the eyes of the Islamic State.
It sounds like she was a fairly determined journalist who regularly reported on IS atrocities in Raqqa. Could you tell us a little bit about Rukia and her activism?
Rukia was originally from Kobani. Her family is from Kobani. Because of the fighting there, they went to Raqqa city, which they thought to be more stable, but ultimately, under Islamic State rule, it's a different form of stability. She graduated from the University of Aleppo with a major in philosophy. Early on, she was active in the revolution before there was anything called an Islamic State. She participated in street protests, demonstrations, and was pretty much fearless in her activism for whomever was attempting to rule Raqqa, whether it was the Assad regime, later incarnations of the FSA, and finally and currently the Islamic State. Her Facebook page portrays a woman who was humorous, freewheeling, very courageous. She reported anything from girls are going to win this revolution in their pajamas, to coalition airstrikes happening over the city, to a series of random arrests on a street in Raqqa City. This was one of her last posts. Reporters in our office today, we were all looking at her final dozen posts or so on Facebook, and we decided that any one of those posts could have done her in ultimately.
You use the words fearless and brave. It sounds like Rukia was aware of the threat against her and the danger. Could she have left Raqqa after the Islamic State entered the city?
She could not. One of her hashtags that she liked to use on her post was Raqqa is a unilateral prison. And that means that nobody can enter or exit the city. There are a series of Islamic State checkpoints around their so-called caliphate capital. And so she was trapped, like so many other activists. On her Facebook page, she has personal pictures of herself. Even though she didn't use her real name, Rukia Hassan, she posted under the name Nisan Ibrahim. She probably was ultimately easier to identify because her face was shown in her pictures.
Will her execution, do you think, deter other journalists from reporting on IS activities in Syria?
No, and these are among the heroes of this Syrian war, if you could say there are any. These are people who go out every day, they look over their shoulders, they have seen their colleagues literally pulled off the streets. One activist we remain in close contact with watched the execution of one of his colleagues and wondered if he would be next. They don't sleep well. They can't live beyond the immediate moment because they know that they could be killed at any time. And their message to the world is, we will keep doing this because if we don't do it, no one else will, and the Islamic State wins.
In her final defiant post on social media, Rukia said that she had received death threats, adding, when the Islamic State arrest and kill me, it's okay because they will cut my head and I'll have dignity. It's better than living in humiliation with ISIS. Poland's president this week signed a media law that critics say undermines freedom of speech. The law gives the government control over appointments in public broadcasting. Warsaw says it's designed to improve the function of the public media and to end corruption. Along with journalists' unions and rights watchdogs, the European Broadcasting Union expressed concerns for editorial independence, particularly given the wide reach of Poland's public broadcaster. Nicola Frank, the union's head of European affairs in Brussels, explains what the law means.
It will allow the government to not only appoint the members, but first, of course, immediately replace the existing members of the supervisory and management bodies of Polish public service media, that is Polish television and Polish radio, and to appoint new members of its own choice, and all this without safeguards for any kind of open and transparent procedure. At the same time, and this is also a problem, the newly appointed members will be dependent on the government because they can be dismissed at any moment, which leads to a system with direct government control over public service media. And we think this is a direct attack on editorial independence of public service media in Poland.
The European Commission plans to discuss the state of the rule of law in Poland following the measure, which was rushed through Parliament over the holiday period without any broad public debate.
It's really a pity because Poland has actually an excellent track record in terms of freedom of the media. In the different press freedom indexes, they rank in the top category for the time being. And also Polish public service media has performed very well in this context. They reach more than 78% of Polish population every week, and that is for television. And Polish radio reaches nearly half the population and provides 18 hours a day of news and current affairs programs. So independence of these two broadcasters is really crucial.
The European Commission will debate the state of rule of law in Poland on Wednesday, an unprecedented move that could lead to punitive measures. And that brings us to the end of this week's International Media with me, Amanda Morrow.
Thank you.